On that note, I want to welcome everybody to the world according to that man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And I want to say the best definition of the show is from Ben Boychuk, who compares it to jazz and free-flowing jazz. And when you hit that perfect note, it sometimes is absolutely perfect. It's not always going to be perfect, but you still got to play and you still got to jam. And that's what we try to do here is, I don't know, play jazz. But I want to welcome everybody to the world according to, it sounded so much better in my head. According to Ben Stein, I want to welcome the Rumblers, the Ranchers, the Truthers. I just want to welcome everybody and say thank you. Thank you to people that download the show. Thank you to all of you for following us on Truth Social, Ben Stein. And of course, we are joined tonight. And remember, join up and sign up for benstein.substack.com. Peter's going to be putting up a piece out there soon. And we're going to start doing that because Peter Roth has got the best pieces out there. Sends them to me every day. I want to thank him for that. He's contributing editor for Newsweek. He also contributes to so many other places. It's insane. Welcome back, our good friend, Peter Roth.
Thank you. You are much too kind.
You're really good.
Sir, could you get me a pillow, please, sir?
Your pillows are in the back.
When I first started as a commentator and a journalist, a well-known, and I won't embarrass him by revealing his name, a well-known Washington pundit and I were together at a political event, and he said, you know, Peter, you may write more than anybody else in Washington. And I started, puffed out and I started to smile. And he said, now that doesn't mean any of it's good. It just means there's more of it than anybody else puts out.
I will tell you with all due respect that when I first started doing something like this for a variety of magazines, especially for the Wall Street Journal, for whom I had just been a columnist for several years, Vlade Putsinski, whom I'm sure you know, very big in the supply side world. He said, they introduced me somewhere and he said, this man writes with both hands. He writes when he's asleep. He never stops writing. And there was something to that.
So there we are, the two of you. Peas and carrots, and you both love, no, you're not peas and carrots, you peas and peas. And
I do think that's right, that when you are a writer, you are always writing in your head. You're not necessarily getting it on paper, but you're always writing.
You should be. You definitely should be. Are you? I don't. Not always. But you should be. You should be grinding it out nonstop.
And of course, this show would not be complete without America's humble servant, multiple Emmy Award winner, speechwriter to two presidents, got a third one elected, former, obviously columnist for the Wall Street Journal,
lawyer, and for the New York Times,
and for Penthouse and Hustler, and
I've never written anything for Hustler.
Penthouse. GQ. I know that to be for sure. Barron's, of course. Anyways, most importantly, he is a father. He's a husband. And he is a grandfather. And second, most importantly, he is the doctor, Benjamin Jeremy Stein.
And the doctor has been working all day long to try to find out why I can make my steaks perfectly and nobody else can.
Well, you like what you like. Some might like what they like, and it's perfect to them. But the most important thing is that it's perfect to you and wifey. That's all that matters.
Big wifey caller and big wifey is her name.
That's all that matters. And anyway, on that note, again, welcome to the world according to Ben Stein. I want to welcome to the people that are going to be listening to this later on via the podcast. Thank you for all the comments, the likes, and all of that jazz. Even if you don't agree with us, we will thank you for listening. And to get this party started tonight, I was telling Peter this story before the show that, and I was going to bring this up the other night to you about we're at a 40-year low on the on our oil stockpile.
And I did not know that, Jude, and I want to thank you for bringing that to the world's attention.
And our oil reserves, and that's a serious,
very, very serious,
very serious thing. And this isn't a discussion right now of whether or not. And I started thinking, because Ben is a huge advocate, and so am I, for us arming up, and I'm pretty sure Peter is too, as much as we human, as much as we possibly can, because I think one thing that COVID really taught us was that our stockpile of things, our shelves were barren, especially for ventilators and all of those things when COVID hit, and you never know what's going to happen, especially these days. And I don't want to get into the whether we should or should not necessarily, but we have offered to send 31 tanks to the Ukraine. Now,
you're welcome.
Now, the is being reported by Fox. There's one problem with sending 31. We don't have them.
And even if we did have them, they're very tricky to operate. And there's a shortage of people trained to instruct. And there's also an extreme shortage of people able to learn to use them.
Right. The problem is, though, so going with all the those shortages, we don't have it.
Had the Biden administration administration not cut and run from Afghanistan, we might have them. But if you will recall, we lent a lot of sensitive military equipment behind as we ran out with our tail between our legs, leaving our friends and our soldiers in arms among the Afghan people behind. And from what I understand, now Mr. Putin is negotiating with the Taliban to buy them.
Yes, yeah, so Ben, just so you know,
so they can disassemble them and reverse engineer all the security measures.
But just so you know, the Pentagon spokesperson, Sabrina Singh, confirmed that the U.S. does not have enough M1 Abraham tanks in the stockpile to send over to Ukraine at this time. So
I would like to ask a respectful that if that's true, and I have no reason to doubt that it's true. It again comes incredibly close to treason, and this administration has stepped so close to that line, it is just terrifying.
You know, you're complete. Yeah, sorry.
And how did they arrive at the number 61?
31.
Oh, 30. I'm sorry. Why didn't they say 30 or 25?
You mean, why didn't this administration do math and add and have a prepared statement when they offered up something that they didn't have? And Peter, this is going to take months.
That may exactly be it. Since they knew they didn't have them and they couldn't send them anyway, the number was immaterial.
That's a very, very good point. But this is a very dangerous precedent. And this reminds me very much of something at the beginning of World War II when President Roosevelt offered to send to Britain and the other allies, whichever ones remained, after the disaster at Dunkirk. And we didn't have them. British didn't have them. We just floundered around for a long time. There were no tanks to fight off the Germans in Greece. There are no tanks to fight off the Germans in Malta. And out of such events are gigantic catastrophes of war created. And at the time of M1A, of needing them desperately for Southeastern Europe, it wasn't as big a crisis because, after all, the Germans were not going to be able to send lots and lots of soldiers to America very, very quickly. Now that's somewhat different. The Germans can send anything they want. The Germans can send anything they want, anywhere they want, in the world, at any time. So it is terrifying, and I'm just, I just wonder what kind of sixth graders are running the show. If I may continue for just one moment, it reminds me of something that I, your humble servant, just wrote about the oil prices and about the fracking, stopping fracking. As if magically they can get some alternative source of energy to appear. And in fact, fracking turned out to have been a huge source of the nation's energy, supplying something like 3 out of every 15 barrels of oil that we were shipping out of the country. And what happened to all that? I mean, the Russians
You're right. And the only way that they are going to find that alternative energy source is magically, because wind can't do it and solar can't do it. So they're going to have to invent a car that runs on fairy dust. But getting back to the issue of the defense posture, every Democratic president of my lifetime, with the exception of Lyndon Johnson, has allowed the U.S. military strategic capabilities to degrade just by not replacing the things that we had. We sell them, we use them, we test them, and then when we need them, we don't have them. And so a president comes in like Ronald Reagan, and he gets dinged for being a warmonger because he needs to spend so much extra on defense just to restore, never mind improve, just to restore America's national security preparedness. And you would think the American people would remember this.
Well, you would think that there would be people in Congress who would be remembering this. Now, see, this again reveals how old I am as compared with you young kids who are hosting the show and being important, vital guests on the show. The Democrat presidents since Nixon, who should have been president, wasn't, really did not have any idea of what to do and even how to add. And I was writing about the shortage of oil that we're facing because of stopping fracking. We got six out of every 15 barrels of oil that we are producing by fracking in this country. That's a very, very large percentage. And if we suddenly stop that, that throws the gears of hydrocarbon production into reverse in a very dreadfully scary way. I don't know how it feels to you, but it scares me to death. I mean, it really does scare me to,
I'm going to tell you why you're completely right. And obviously, Peter, and somebody stated in the rants that Russia stated that if Germany sends it, then Germany's a target and Germany's sending, what are they called? The Leopard tanks, I believe.
The Leopard 2 was supposed to be a very good tank.
It's supposedly
but light compared to what the Russians.
It's supposedly much easier and better for what the Ukrainians need. That's what military experts are reporting. But I want to get back to this thing. The first thing, there should be a job. And maybe there is a job, and we know Mayor Pete's in charge of transportation, but there should be a stockpiling checking job. I mean, the first thing you do when you get in there, Ben, is, you know, now it's going to be to make sure nobody had classified documents left over, but it should be to check our stockpiles because the people in charge, obviously, and just to put this in perspective, the reason I'm really upset and passionate about this is because whether you consider what we have a pandemic to have been real or fake, we had a generational thing that happened to us, and we were caught caught off guard. Who knows what the next once in a generation thing could be, Ben? And that could be war. And we really have to be prepared and know what the hell is in our stockpile.
Well, your humble servant, this man to your left, Judah, has been writing about this literally, I think, since before you could read. I mean, I've been writing about this forever. And the Republicans, even the most staunch Republicans, poo-poo it. They just don't believe it could possibly be true. But numbers matter. In wartime, numbers matter. And if we do not have the numbers necessary to fight a war, and yet we throw ourselves into the war without consultation with Congress, without consultation with the American people, we are really risking a lot of things. People have their heads in their right minds, don't even know what's going on in this situation. Yes, we offered to send 31 M1 A1 Abrams tanks, a very, very powerful tank and a wonderful tank that everybody made fun of when it first came out, but it turned out to be a great tank. Why couldn't we have made more of them? People say, oh, well, because they cost so much. And they do cost a lot. They don't cost much compared with losing a war.
You're completely right. And I want to get back to Peter's point. You see, Peter, what you brought up about, forget about what set aside all the weapons and everything that we left in Afghanistan. Think about the pullout and the weakness that shows.
I need two pillows.
Now, we make an announcement that we're going to send 31 tanks, and the Pentagon. So I believe truly that that Kabul pullout was the impetus for Putin going into the Ukraine. But secondly, secondly, though, Peter, the world, everybody would always say, oh, the world looks at Donald Trump as a joke. No, the world's looking at Biden now as a joke when he promises to send 31 things of weaponry that we don't have.
And 31 high end, very high end.
Thinking globally, what does that tell Xi Jinping in China? What does that tell Kim Jong-un or Il or whichever Kim Jong he is in Pyongyang, North Korea, about U.S. military preparedness and U.S. military resolve? Yeah. I mean, the fact is, the North Koreans could swallow up South Korea in a military invasion before we could do anything about it. And we're just
I'm not sure that's true. I mean, we could turn Pyongyang into a big glass parking lot.
If we chose to respond in a non-conventional manner, yes. But if the North is, all of my friends with any kind of military experience tell me that it would be very easy for the North to invade the South again and get to the tip of the Korean Peninsula before we could do anything about it. That the troops that are stationed there would be fighting a rear guard action to slow them down because they couldn't stop them.
Well, this is, I'm afraid, typical just Democrat war making policy. I mean, this happened exactly the same way in 1941. It happened exactly the same way when we had the horrible, horrible, horrible North Korean / Chinese / Russian invasion of South Korea. And we don't seem to have learned anything from it.
And it happened in Vietnam.
Well, it happened in Vietnam, not exactly the same.
I think it's comparable because when we left Vietnam, when we took the U.S. troops out, we promised that we would guarantee the territorial integrity of South Vietnam and we would supply the Vietnamese army to fight their own war. And then the 74 election happened and conservatives were defeated by radical liberals all across the country in the Senate and the House. And they refused to approve President Ford's request for aid for the South Vietnamese government.
And yeah, then the northern tanks came south. And the northern tanks came south. And we had said to the South Vietnamese government, don't worry about the fact that these tanks are going to come rolling towards Saigon, because we have so many airplanes on aircraft carriers nearby and in the Thailand. So whatever they send there, we'll blow them out of the sky with our airplanes, but then with our airplanes, but then Congress would not do it. And so we didn't have the balls to actually go in there and do it. I mean, we keep making promises that we can't keep. And it's a very dangerous, scary situation. We can't keep doing this. And when we are keeping doing it, and the results are deadly, but we're very, very blessed. Very blessed that we have in Southeastern Europe a country called Ukraine, and they have the balls to stand up and fight the overwhelmingly superior Russians, overwhelmingly superior in terms of military hardware, but not necessarily superior in terms of wisdom, ambition, and courage. But we are unfortunately really, really, really way behind the eight ball in terms of having courage. I had a friend in Washington, and you, Peter, seem to know everything. We'll remember the name Peter Flanagan. Peter was a very, very, very successful businessman. His great grandparents founded Anheuser-Busch, so he could hardly fail to be successful. And he said, "We don't care how many tanks they have or how many tanks we have. What it takes is guts." But that turns out not to be true. It turns out that yes, we want to have lots of guts, and we do have lots of guts. The people in the armed forces are nothing but guts. But if we don't have the wherewithal to blow up the North Vietnamese where they start out, or where they started off on Highway 1 heading down to Saigon, what are we going to do? Or what do we do?
I agree. And our lack of courage and our lack of commitment means that we end up paying the ultimate cost, which is the red blood coming out of the white and black and brown and red and yellow American fighting men and women who have to go and clean up for the politicians' mistakes and fear.
Mistakes, fear, and dare I say, questionable loyalty. Questionable loyalty. Question, well, a good question, whose side are we on? There's a famous Pete Seeger song. Pete Seeger, I think, I don't know if he's living or not, but I think he was believed to be a communist. I'm not sure whether he was or not, but he had a song called "Which Side Are You On?" And big, big question, which side is the administration on? At a certain point, and Peter, you're a lawyer too, correct?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. And at a certain point in law, even if you're not doing it intentionally, if you have such incredible incompetence in terms of getting what you say you're going to do done, that it is held to be similar to doing it intentionally. And I think we're there now.
I think
I've got my nurse over here.
That's okay. You've been saying this all along, and I didn't.
I got another pull up there.
I think the pandemic really changed my views on a lot of things, especially about preparation.
In the bedroom.
But you're completely right. And Peter, we're left right now. And Ben brought up the word treasonous. What we're left with.
And I don't want to say treasonous, but certainly lack of loyalty.
There's Peter. What's going on now in this country and around the world, and the dereliction of our responsibility and our duties to our own, first of all, and secondly, to the rest, it's very much an embarrassment. Peter, this is when I saw this story just pop up before the show, I had no intention of discussing this, but when I saw the fact that we're promising something we don't have.
Okay. I'm sorry, Judy, you're the fastest person I've ever seen with the internet. How many 600 M1A1s does the U.S. Armed Forces have?
I will look that up. Peter, go for it.
I was raised to believe that America was the country the rest of the world could count on. When bad guys backed you into a corner, America would come to your aid, because we weren't a country so much as we were an idea. This is what my parents taught me to think. This is what my teachers taught me to think. This is what I learned from the books that I read. And it appears, at least right now, that's not true. It is shocking to me. The
8,000.
We have 8,000?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That's impossible.
Currently, the U.S. has about 8,000 Abrams, but significantly less are battle ready, he said. The U.S. trust from the, okay. I should just Poland, which is by, okay. So I'll read the whole thing. The U.S. draws from those tanks in storage and remanufactures them for the allies, such as Poland, which is buying upwards of 350 Abrams. This is a day ago that was reported. So there you are.
Well, maybe they can make it good. But the Poles are terribly smart and terribly handy, and maybe they can make the make those tanks battle.
So, but remember, so we have in service. We have 25. 09 M1A in service with further 3,700 in storage. But again, we're obviously the Pentagon saying the number is, the fact that we're having this conversation shows you, Peter, how inept this regime actually is. I mean, that's really what this comes down to, that's even that we're having this discussion, Peter.
I think that's right. And you know, what I was leading up to is, you know, everybody attacked Donald Trump for being an isolationist, and he wasn't. He just said that we're not going to intervene with American troops where U.S. national interests are not threatened directly. But he talked tough, and he built up the military, and he supported the military. And Putin and Xi and Kim Jong-un and all the other petty tin pot dictators around the world knew that they needed to stay in their box. Biden comes in, and Biden is the great internationalist, the former chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the former vice president of the United States. and he knows all the world leaders, and he's going to bring us all together, kumbaya, to fight climate change while the Russians go into Ukraine and the Chinese take over Taiwan and the North Koreans take over South Korea. And who knows what the Hamas launches rockets again at Jerusalem, and who knows what other evil things people get up to, because Biden is a weak leader.
Well, he is a weak leader. I'd like to see the Republicans now move up a little bit at the total starting gate and say, here's our plan. If it turns out that we do have to use our M1A1s, here's our plan. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. And yes, there'll be some large number of them which are not battle ready. We're going to take an enormous amount of investment to do it, but it can be done, and it will do it. We're not afraid of how much it costs. After all, we spend money we don't have all the time. We're constantly spending money that we don't even remotely have. So if we spend money that we don't even remotely have, if we could spend, instead of on being broadband to the inner city, maybe we could spend on making these tanks battle ready. So it's the one country in Europe that is ready to fight for freedom, namely Ukraine.
You're right.
If
we can spend money paying farmers not to farm, and for the Fed to pay banks not to lend money, and for people not to work and stay on unemployment, then I'm sure we can find the money someplace. Maybe out of the funds Mr. Biden uses to go to Delaware every weekend.
Yeah.
To make 30 tanks battle worthy.
Don't knock Delaware. They have the best fried chicken in America.
No. I'm not knocking Delaware. Just saying the president goes out of town every weekend. You worked in the White House, Ben. You know what an expensive proposition it is to move the president anywhere outside the White House.
That's if he's ever, Peter, if he's actually ever left Delaware.
Well,
I want to see signs of life.
I want to see guts. I think Mr. Biden has done better than I thought he would do in terms of being ready to fight. And now he is ready to fight, he says, anyway. And we are sending a hell of a lot more arms to Ukraine than I think most of us thought Mr. Biden and his friends would do. So that's our sad story
Here's what I worry about. You know, the Reagan policy in Afghanistan, which the situations are somewhat analogous, was not to arm the Mujahideen to the point where they could chase the Russians back behind the border. It was to raise the cost to the Russians to stay so that the Russians would decide to leave. And what I am afraid of is that the Biden administration, in overcorrecting, may now be thinking about what do we have to give the Ukrainians so the army of Ukraine can chase the Russians back into Russia, which is an extremely provocative act. I am happy to help the Ukrainians defend themselves. I'm happy for America to take an active role in that. But if we're sending them tanks so they can push the Russians out, I'm worried about where they go. Do they go back behind the Russian border? Or do they go into Poland? They go into Moldova? Do they go into Germany accidentally? I don't think that this is a very well-considered decision. It's embarrassing that we don't have the tanks to send them. I'm not sure. I'm frankly not as concerned about sending them airplanes, but I am concerned about sending them battle tanks, because that can very quickly get into a wider war.
And with Russian, red Bolshevist Russians, who just call themselves Russians, at the wheel or at the the passenger side of the cockpit of the super good Russian tanks, there's going to be some Russian dead, and they're going to wave the bloody flag and say, we tried to be restrained and America just wouldn't have any of it. They just wanted to fight. And so here we are. They want a war. We'll give the war. They want a war that's many thousands of miles from American shores. We'll take a war that's an hour's drive from our shores. So something's gone wrong here in terms of strategy for America. Yes, we love the Ukrainians for fighting. They're wonderful. They have balls of steel. We love them. But is this a good place to be fighting war? I guess it's the only place where we could find somebody who would fight a war and would fight bravely and resourcefully. And they have fought that way, and we've helped them. And more power to the Ukrainians, more power to Mr. Biden for arming them. But is this the best way we could spend our money? Is this the best way we could clean up a mess on our shores and then get back to the business at hand, which is protecting Lvov and other places within Ukraine from monstrous Soviet imperialism?
Okay. If you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I want to welcome the Rumblers, Ranters, and Truthers. Remember, benstein.substack.com. And to the people that are commenting in the comment section, all you need to do is go into the rants and don't click the dollar sign, but just put your message in where the dollar sign is and then press send. And that way I could see it we could see the messages live during the show. And it's hard for me to have to hit a bunch of different buttons during and not see your comments. So we are not ignoring you, Ghost of DC, Pat Malik, and Jason West. That's J-S-U-N West. Very good. I like that, Jason. And I want to welcome everybody back to The World According to Ben Stein. And again, I want to spend quickly on this, but it's you're both bringing up really good points. But here is wherein lays the major issue.
Lies, too.
I was got it correctly. Yes, Mrs. Levitt. Where do we go? I've brought up on the show, Peter is obviously, and so we're not in this if there's a different regime or different presidency right now. But the fact is, do we have an exit strategy? What's the plan? Again, I keep on saying this. If you're going to keep on telling Americans that they have to send this and this and this, and they have to send tons of money, Americans at a certain point deserve to know what the strategy is. Do we have a strategy to end this? Do we have diplomats on the ground? Do we have anything going on where there's an end in sight to something that's 11 months and 2 days old? Do we have any strategy other than constantly sending band-aids? There's got to be a certain point. There's got to be peace. We can't, there's got to be a pathway to peace, Ben Stein. And do we have, we know we can't trust them counting the stock supply, our weapon supply. Could we count on them to do diplomatic relations?
Can we count on them to do anything? But I, as I say, I've seen the Ukrainians fighting, and I think it's miraculous how well they're doing. And their courage and their resolve, I think, is unique in the post-war era. I'm really, really impressed with them, although the British did incredibly well fighting in Greece after World War II. The British did incredibly well fighting in, in other parts of Europe. I'm blanking on the names right now. But we've got Ukraine. That's an incredible country with incredible people in it. Let's supply them arms. And if we have to rebuild and have bigger weapons building capacity, let's do it. What would Europe look like right now if the Reds, well, there's Russians now, if the Russians were allowed to just take over anywhere they wanted?
Peter, I agree with him. This isn't a matter of disagreement, Peter. It's a matter of we have this schmuck coming up soon giving the State of the Union. The American people deserve to hear what's the plan?
The problem is I don't think there is a plan. They found a status quo. The nabobs at the State Department have found a status quo they can live with, and so they don't want to rock the boat and make it worse. I mean, look, this ends when Putin is either escorted or carried out of the Kremlin. One way, horizontal, vertical. When Putin goes,
no, the problem is, Peter, the problem is it's being reported many times over that the guy underneath him, that's his successor, is supposedly far more brutal than Putin is. So
frankly, the ability of the American intelligence community to read what's going on in Russia is as bad today as it was when they called it the Soviet Union and they were trying to decide if Yuri Andropov was a good guy or a bad guy. And Konstantin Chernenko was a good guy or a bad guy, or Brezhnev was a good guy and a bad guy. They were all bad guys, and they're all going to be bad guys. But one of the things I do think...
I like that. That is good, succinct comment.
Thank you. One of the things I do think the Biden administration has been doing pretty well is the economic sanctions that are targeting the oligarchs who put Putin in power and who help keep Putin in power. And if they continue, if the administration and the global financial regime continues to raise the cost to the oligarchs of Putin remaining in power and Putin having troops in Ukraine, I'm hoping that means that they will one way or another engineer his removal from power.
The one thing I think we could all agree on is that nobody except Ben Stein, and I will say this, I didn't hear anybody, and this is why I don't trust people that are, say they're military experts, they're experts in anything, because the only thing you need to be an expert in sometimes is history, which both Peter Roth and Benjamin Jeremy Stein, especially Benjamin Jeremy Stein, are. Mm-hmm. And Ben Stein was the one that was saying, don't underestimate the Ukrainian army. He said it before. He said it at the beginning. I didn't, because I'm not as knowledgeable nearly as Ben Stein could ever it or whatever. All I get is my hanging out with him knowledge. But Ben predicted this.
I predicted the Ukrainians can continue the fight for a good long time. Ukraine is not a little dot on the map. It's a pretty good sized country. And it's got some pretty damn tough people.
Oh, it's amazing.
And not incidentally, they can grow their own food. They are the breadbasket of Europe. They're the breadbasket of the world.
But what's amazing is, but my point being is, when you listen to these so-called experts, I mean, you could go back, and I'm sure everybody could go back 11 months and 5 days ago and watch reporting on Fox or wherever in the military experts, every single one of them, Major Keane and all these other people saying this is going to be over in 13 days, but not Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And I want to move on as we decided today we're going to do a little more on the social side and personal. On the personal side. Before I get to the personal side, I said to this to Ben as I was at his house today and I was leaving, and I said, there's something fascinating about Trump and the boomerang effect. And what I meant by that was that everything that gets thrown at him gets nailed back times 10 worse at the person that's throwing it at him. And Ben said that happened. And then we started talking about it, and it's almost, it never happens. I mean, Ben, everybody that's gone after him, their businesses have been damaged, their reputations, if they ever cared about them. It's a very fascinating thing to look at.
It's a very fascinating thing to look at. You're very kind. I appreciate your kind compliments. But it is true. Well, as we had a saying above the front door of law school at Yale, which I used to pass by on my way to class happy days when I actually went to class, and said the life of the law is not logic, but experience. And experience teaches us that the Ukrainians are very, very tough people. Now, I'm sad to say that some of that toughness was on the side of the Nazis in World War II. I mean, they're tough, tough people, but sometimes their toughness is aimed at the innocent Jews. That's all over with now. Their premier is a Jew. Let's hope and pray that they can find some blood brothers in the State Department and the Department of Defense who will say, we appreciate your toughness. I had a wonderful teacher, a Colombian, wonderful, wonderful teacher in our foreign relations class, post-war Eastern Europe foreign relations class. He made an amazingly smart point around 1964, 65. He said, there is only one country in the world surrounded by hostile communist powers, and that is Russia, a USSR at that time. It was a brilliant aperçu. I think the same is true now. Russia is surrounded by hostile communist powers, and I don't think that the Chinese, if worse came to worse and push came to shove, are going to be ready to send just couple of hundred million people to be murdered and vaporized by the United States for fighting in Ukraine so far away.
I think that's right. The Chinese have determined they want to be on the side of the winners.
Right.
And that's the way they have played it in the post-Mao era, I think.
And they played it that way for a long time. I had a very, very, very smart friend who was an investment banker in London. And he said he had noticed something. Late 70s. He said he noticed the Japanese were always being written up as incredibly clever at deal making, but their deals usually did not go very well. Whereas the Chinese, when we thought of it as just saying, can we get egg rolls with that? They never screwed up. They never screwed up. They were very careful and they never screwed up. And I think the same thing is going on now. They just are not the kind of people to screw up. They're very, very tough, resilient, and they are smart, smart, smart.
But they do have their problems. And there was
a story out,
I think it was this week, that for the first time, the Chinese population overall has declined while the Indian population continues to grow. And if you want to talk about enmity, the Chinese and the Indians are not friendly, to put it mildly. And if there was ever going to be a place where a conventional war turned into a nuclear war, it would be a Chinese-India border clash.
And, well, let's hope that doesn't happen.
And I am hoping that it doesn't happen. But people seem to forget there are 2 billion people in India.
Wow,
that's a tremendous resource, and particularly because so many of them are, it being a former British colony, they have the Western legal traditions, they have the Western intellectual traditions. They understand commerce, they understand innovation, they are producers. It is just amazing the transformation that is occurring there. And that's the Asia competition now. It's not the Chinese and the Russians for the middle part of Asia. It's the Chinese and the Indians. And President Xi has a demographic problem that he's not going to have enough people, even with, what is it, 4 billion? I don't know, 3 billion Chinese now, that he's got to have the human infrastructure. Like Julian Simon said, that people are the great economist from Chicago, who said that people are the world's greatest resource. And he's losing resources because he's losing population. So well, he's in decline too.
He is an example of something that the great Ulysses S. Grant said. I'll be dying to know how many people watching this know who Ulysses S. Grant was. He said when he was in a battle and things were going badly, he said he had to figure that the other side, which in his case was the Confederates, also had every single one of the problems that he had. And I think that the Russians have every single problem that we have and that the Ukrainians have. For one thing, I don't think the Russians are all that incredibly happy with Mr. Putin and his behavior, sending their sons off to die in some horrible hellhole in Ukraine, where previously Jews, helpless, homeless, unarmed Jews were being sent out to be murdered by Russians. Now, helpless, homeless Jews are being murdered by the Red Army death squads. Nobody says a thing about that at all, by the way, in the United States of America. Let's go back to square one. We have a country in Ukraine that has pulled itself together miraculously, is ready to fight and die and bleed and be heroes and exemplars to the whole rest of the world. Let's keep arming them. Yes, Judy, you're so right. Let's have an idea of where that money is going. It's too much money, even for Democrats to waste. Let's have an idea of where that money is going, but then let's back these people up to the hilt. And let them know that we value them and that we are admirers of theirs. We send them HIMARS, great, great, great long-range missiles, because we love them and believe in them.
So if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And we've discussed a lot of history tonight, and we've discussed a lot of history tonight. I think it's important to really know your history, as we've discussed. And that's one of the reasons I love having Peter on, and Ben Boyjuk, Mandy, but everybody. But Peter really knows his history, and obviously so does Ben Stein. And as you were bringing up Modi, and it's funny, it's not funny, it's very sad. Elon Musk, actually, Twitter, everybody, you know, everybody's the right's golden child, golden boy right now, banned an anti-Modi tweet of a documentary that was anti-Modi. But you brought up something about Modi, and I it wasn't
who
that
who is long. Modi?
The Indian prime minister.
The Indian prime minister. And
we know, but we have an audience that might not know.
Yeah. And it's important to remember. It wasn't that long ago that we had a president that was, and I'm using air quotes, that was pals with these people, and would constantly bring up their names and the good relationships he had with them, because that was his business style of how to basically put the lid on these people, of them, you know, Little Rocket Man, my best friend, and Modi and all these people, and constantly bringing up their names. There's a reason he kept on doing that. And it's an important lesson in life, business wise, or to keep on doing that. And Trump did it brilliantly. And now we have a person like Ben said, who's Modi. I venture to say every day they have to remind Biden who Modi is. OK, every day they have to remind him how to pronounce Xi Jinping's name. OK, remember, Trump just called him Xi, my pal Xi. And nobody even knew there was a Xi Jinping. God, do I how I missed the last 2 years. Do you want to get to the personal story or no?
Yes, I do. I certainly do. We only have 7 minutes to go, but I love hearing Judah's story about his life as a young single person in glorious LA, where the currency of love is money. And Judah. I keep calling him Judy. Judah has so many great stories about this, but I will tell you that I grew up, spent most of my life for a long time in Washington, D.C., where it was important to have some money and to come from a socially meaningful family, although you couldn't be Jewish, but socially meaningful anyway. And then when I came to L.A., it was all about money. Every drop was about money. And for Judah, who is decently housed, decently cared for, a human being, he can get along. But he's in competition with people who count their money, only count the first six zeros after one digit number. And if you're
That's not my huge problem. And thank you for the compliment on the haircut. But yes, Ben's correct. But I Peter, and I've said this, I am like the bad form of intersectionality. Okay. Like I don't fit in the higher currency of intersectionality. So I'm a conservative. I'm Jewish. I'm sober. I have suffered from alopecia. I'm pretty high off in the scale of intersectionality, if that counted. Okay. And a Jewish conservative in LA. So I was on this, I kid you not, a girl started talking to me today on this dating app, Ben. And I saved the exact thing. We're having a decent conversation. Well, actually, it wasn't a decent conversation. I just paid her a few compliments. And as we're having this conversation, she, I'm not joking either. She wrote, Ben, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I see you are sober. I hate to waste your time, but that's a deal breaker for me.
Wait, she said that to you?
Yes.
Why would that be a deal breaker?
I go, people that improve their lives. I go, people that improve their lives, ? Good luck. And that was the end of the conversation. So I can't get, because of my politics, obviously, because it's been extremely difficult. But I just was taken aback by the sober thing. It's such a mainstream thing now.
What did she mean by that? I'm just kind of curious. No.
Well, what do you want me to ask? What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people? You sober people? And I'm like thinking to myself, either she enjoys the drinking lifestyle, or she had a bad reaction, I guess, with somebody with a drug addict. But the term sober, is, as you've written, Ben, is such a beautiful word. The term sober really is a beautiful word, and I was a little taken aback. But I just thought, there you are, 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, this happened, that I got this message. I was excited all of a sudden, and then I get this message. Peter, usually the other day, just so to keep you in the loop, it was a girl that was Googling me as we were speaking and seeing that I do this show and stuff, and our politics didn't coincide. Today, it's I'm sober. So, Ben, there you are. There's my...
I know, but that's not... That is, to me, a humble person I am, humble but old, I would say, what you mean by that? Could we have a discussion about that? You're obviously a very intelligent woman. And
the way it works is they delete you. When they make that comment, they delete the, so you can't have that back and forth.
Well, if that's the kind of person she is, doesn't even want to discuss.
Then you're right. Then you're 100% right. But I just, Peter.
Look at it this way, Judah. She saved you a lot of time.
Yeah, she saved me a lot of time on the bar bill, because obviously she likes
she saved you time. She saved you money.
Yeah.
I think you're the clear winner here.
I agree 100%, but Ben likes to hear my stories, so
I do love to hear the stories, and I hope and pray that this is only the very beginning of them. I mean, my life is so different from that. I've been married forever, you could basically say forever, to the same incredibly wonderful woman, a living, breathing goddess, an actual goddess, actual divinity, who can walk on water, perform miracles, is an actual divinity, and so I don't understand people who would try to walk away from that kind of miracle. And I especially don't understand people who would walk away from the miracle of being sober. And by being sober means knowing. Sober means knowing. Knowing that if you want to be sober, you can have a relationship with your God and not be blurred out of the picture of decency by having a relationship with your God. Whether your God is the Lord Jesus Christ, or whether your God is Jehovah, or whatever, whoever your God is, let's be smart about this. What really counts is, are you in touch with the Lord your God? And we know an awful lot about him, not everything, obviously. And if she's saying, I don't want to know him, I don't care about him, I don't want to know him, God help her.
That's exactly right. And as we're closing shop, Peter, I was really very quickly, I've been thinking a lot about this, because especially from, you've read Ben's diaries for so many years, and I had no idea that in Ben's time, you know, if you were a black, that when you had a house listed, it said your race and your religion.
No, it didn't say your race. It would say if they didn't want any Jews around them, it would say close to churches. As for blacks, well, it would just be unthinkable. I mean, there's no
right.
It would be inconceivable that a white person would sell his house to black people.
So Peter, what I was saying to Ben as I was running is how scary we've devolved, because it's no longer necessarily a race thing. It's now a political thing. I don't want that Republican living next door to me. I don't want that belief system living next door to me. And I'm very scared. I do look at the human condition. I do look at what's going on out there, especially because I'm in this world. And that is a huge thing, Peter. And it's very frightening.
I do think at some point we should do a show about the intolerance of the tolerant, because that's really what you're talking about.
Well, that's exactly what I've written in my profile.
The people who preach tolerance are the most intolerant, judgmental, nasty, self-absorbed, Kens and Karens that exist on the planet.
That's exactly what I say all the time to people. Anybody that says they're open-minded never are. Anybody that says they're non-judgmental always is. And anybody that says they're spiritual never is, because if you are a certain thing, you never have to say it. I know Ben's not a judgmental person. He doesn't have to tell me ever he's not judgmental. And I would imagine the same thing for you. I know Ben to be a spiritual person, and he never has to say to me, Judah, boy, am I very spiritual today? I know how his mind and his brain and his world operates of forgiveness and God and love. You know, if you Thank are you. Those things, you don't have to proselytize. And Peter, to those people that always have to say it, so everybody out there, if somebody ever says to you they're open-minded, run as far away as you can. And on that note, I want to thank Ben for allowing me to do this, but especially my little personal and private stories. And Peter, you're welcome into our little world over here.
I forget. You're single too, are you not,
Peter? No, he's not. He's been in all.
I am in a committed, affianced relationship with a lovely woman.
Good.
She is. She's amazing. She helps set up the show.
Yeah.
Wow.
For whom I care greatly. She is funny, beautiful, smart.
That's great.
Just really the total package. And
well, you're a very blessed
man. Even though this is late in life for both of both she and her son and my children.
How old are you, Peter?
I'm 57. And so we have a good thing going, I think somebody would say.
I am very,
very excited about our future and our life together.
Hey, Peter, you just made my night, because I'm talking to two people that offer people so much hope, because I obviously know wifey very well. And I know when Ben speaks about her the way she does, she is that person. And I'm so glad that you shared that story, Peter. I wish more people would share these stories. And I know sometimes it's like it gives me hope. And that's why
is always hope out there.
But again, as we get back to this, we're closing up. The reason why these stories are so important to share is because we're told now not to share them. These are stories of hope, of faith, of God, of union, and all these things that our country is so sorely lacking and missing sometimes. And these things are so important to hear, the bonds that you guys have built. And the bonds of friendship and the bonds of love and the bonds of all that. Anyways, I'm done with my Benny Hinn stuff.
I want to hear more next time.
No, I will make sure to get rejected again. I want to thank the Rumblers, the Ranters, the Truthers. And yes, John, whoever wrote that, when somebody says, I'd make a good friend or whatever you said. Thank you very much. And thank you everybody in the rants for all the input. You guys are great and you guys are funny, and we love you all and we appreciate you. And thank you to the people that listen to the podcast. Remember, benstein.substack.com. That's benstein.substack.com. You can follow Ben on True Social. Peter, how do people find you?
Newsweek.com, Google, on Truth Social and Twitter, I'm The Roth Draft, and on Facebook, I'm just me, Peter Roth.
Perfect. And of course, you can find Ben everywhere. You can find him on True Social. You can find him at spectator.org. You can find him on Newsmax. And you could find him here at The World According to Ben Stein. So to the people that are listening to this, subscribe to our channel on Rumble. And as always, we do this for fun and for free. And God bless you all. Ben, please take us out.
Oh, beautiful. For spacious skies, and for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesties above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood. From sea to shining sea.
God bless you all. God bless the Ukraine. God bless America. God bless the world. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see everybody Saturday night.